Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tierney ou le grand pont pour éliminer Furlong. Qu'est-ce qu'il lui a fait là? Qu'est-ce qu'il lui fait, Kieran Tierney? Kieran Tierney, c'est quoi? C'est quoi ça? Il vient souhaiter une très bonne année aux supporters d'Arsenal. Kieran Tierney, quel rush! Magnifique! Magnifique!
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, it's a goodly morning again.
Goodly morning, Andrew. How you doing today?
I'm all right. I got a coffee. I've got an orange Kit Kat. Life is pretty fucking sweet.
An orange Kit Kat?
Yeah.
I've never had one.
They're delicious. It's like Terry's chocolate
orange. Where is the
orange?
Talk to me. Is it in the chocolate or is there like a layer of orange?
It's no, it must be in the chocolate. Yeah, it must be. Because the crispy bit is the usual crispy bit, but the chocolate has got an orange tang to it, which is good. I like orange chocolate, I have to say. You know,
so
when you get at Christmas, you get the Quality Street or the Roses, the tin. It used to be a tin, now it's a plastic tub, which is not environmentally friendly at
That's
all.
A shame.
Yeah, they should be using obviously metals from the earth itself to provide the sweets. But you know, I'm always diving in there to snaffle all the orange ones that I can, so
that's good. I mean, I feel like when I was growing up, the fruity ones were left over. So, you know, you could have been the yin to our yang. You could have come around and absolutely cleaned up.
Yeah, nobody likes that little green triangle one. Or no, what's it like, a little diamondy green one that's
what
in the corner?
What is that?
I don't know.
What is inside?
I think it's just the bits that are left over.
Looking at the back of the box or the little pamphlet that they provide you with, that's cheating. I think you have to guess what is inside and make your own assumptions, you know?
Yeah. I think they've, on the new ones now, I think they've actually got the names of the sweets on each one. So,
oh, really?
Certainly on the roses, because my dad always gets a big tub of roses and they're on the wrapper now. So it's, orange cream or strawberry delight or chocolate hoo-ha, whatever it is, you know?
It's removed the kind of Russian roulette element. By the way, I've just seen a football story on Twitter that I must mention. ESPN have reported that the 53-year-old Japanese striker Kazuyoshi Miura has signed a new contract with Yokohama FC.
I thought you were going to say with us.
Well, I imagine everyone in Arsenal's recruitment department being like, no, damn it! God, we were so close!
We had a 7-year deal lined up for that guy.
Take him to retirement age at 65. Pension.
Well, look, I think we'll have some chat a bit later on about some of the contract decisions and some of the players, and obviously, there's one in particular that I think is going to be a topic of discussion. But I feel like for the first part of this show, we can delve into the things that weren't so great. But you know, we had a 2-0 win over Newcastle in the FA Cup at the weekend. I'm curious as to your thoughts on the game itself, just overall, like what was your takeaway? Because I was quite struck watching on the BBC, Ian Wright, Alan Shearer and Gary Lineker seemed to be basically making their own fun as much as possible.
Most
of that seemed to be at the expense of Alan Shearer. And I'm not saying I have any objection to this whatsoever, but it seemed to be all about, like, you want to touch this FA Cup that you never won?
Yep.
And all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you know, I'm on board with all that. But they weren't as, or particularly enamored with the game itself. And it wasn't the greatest game of all time, far from it. But from an Arsenal perspective, you know, we've had performances and games this season in which we've really done fuck all, like literally nothing. It's been an absolute sinkhole of time and effort and everything else to look at Arsenal play. But when I look at the game and I look at the stats and the fact that we had, 25 attempts on goal, it feels like, okay, look, it wasn't great. It was frustrating at times. There was a dearth of quality in certain areas. But is this not a better kind of frustration than what we were seeing previously?
I think that's maybe fair, yeah. I think there's a degree of sort of, you know, we become accustomed to analysing this team in a certain way. And therefore, you know, we kind of project that onto all performances. For me, I think there's sort of a distinction between the 90 minutes and the period of extra time where I thought Arsenal were a lot better. I think you can almost kind of divide this game as to kind of when the subs were made and how much we improved in that period. I mean, one thing that struck me, reading Scott's column on Arsblog by the numbers, you know, he made it pretty clear. Newcastle really could have won this game. I think if he put it through his simulation, I think he said the majority of the time, you know, you'd expect Newcastle, based on the chances they created, to win this match. So Arsenal could have very nearly been out of the cup.
That's so weird, isn't it? Because they had two shots on target in the entire game.
I know. Well, I suppose they put a very presentable opportunity off target.
The Andy Carroll one
that was flagged offside incorrectly.
What a centre-half he is, eh?
Yeah. He did have a strange game. I mean, you see him in the lineup, and I kind of, again, you know how we talk about being conditioned to sort of respond to things in a certain way. I see Andy Carroll and I panic. I go, oh, this is going to be a nightmare. He's 32 now. I mean, he's been around a long time, but his game was kind of more, he did more for them defensively than offensively.
It was unreal. It was like every time a cross came in, there's Andy Carroll heading it away. Hang on a second, you were up the other end. I mean, what's his heat map like?
It's a shame we've got our two left-sided centre-halves because, yeah, he'd probably be available. But yeah, it's an interesting point about the game. I mean, I'm in a WhatsApp group with some mates who aren't Arsenal fans, and they texted saying they thought the BBC were a bit down on the game. They were like, I actually think this was more entertaining than the BBC gave it credit for.
Right. Okay. Well, fair enough. It was, you know, it's not the kind of game that's going to live long in the memory. I just feel like in the context of this season and, you know, based on some of the other performances that we've seen, I prefer to see Arsenal end up with 25 shots on goal, 12 or so on target towards the end, you know, playing the law of averages a little bit in terms of, you know, scoring goals and all that kind of stuff. So let's talk.
Of course.
Let's talk a bit about the starting lineup and the players that he picked. I think there was obviously going to be rotation, and I don't think that rotation was based on anything more than, look, the guys who've done well in the three Premier League games, it's not so much about giving them a rest, it's about giving other players minutes in their legs because we've got a hectic schedule coming up. You need as many players in form and match sharp and all that as possible. So I kind of understood the decisions that he made when it came to the team lineup. Did you have any particular issues with it? Was there anything that you didn't expect? Obviously, the Martinelli thing was a bit of a blow early on.
Yeah. Although nice to see that Reece Nelson is alive. That was a change.
Yeah.
I suppose in terms of the lineup, I had no issues at all, really. The only issue I had, funnily enough, was sort of Kieran Tierney and thinking,
yeah,
how much football can we squeeze out of this young man's legs?
I know,
legs?
Yeah.
I know Kolasinac has gone, but you've got Ainsley Maitland-Niles there on the subs bench. He could do a job. I mean, what do you make of the decision to play Tierney? Is it just the case that he's so integral to the way we play right now?
Could be. I mean, I do wonder if he's one of those players who just needs to play. When he gets into a rhythm, the best thing for him is to play. But at the same time, I was sitting there at the end of 90 minutes thinking, you know, we could probably do ourselves a favour here and take him off. And then he, you know, in the 119th minute, he bombs forward and he sets up a goal for Aubameyang. He's unbelievable. He is unbelievable. But I think it's absolutely right to harbour some concerns about how much he can play and with what frequency. I would be very surprised if we weren't trying to find some kind of left back cover solution. I mean, look, Cedric can play there, or he has played there in the past. Ainsley Maitland-Niles can play there. So I just wonder, you know, what the thinking was when it came to Tierney. Look, I think the lesson from this game for Arteta is that when you take out the good players and replace them with less good players, you don't play as well. That's the lesson. And I think that might be the disappointment for him, despite the fact that we've won, is that he was looking for Reece Nelson, Joe Willock, Willian, etc., to respond to what's happened and to sort of rise to the challenge, if you like. And I'm not sure that any of them particularly did. I think the one player who hasn't played a great deal in the recent past, who I think had a good game, was David Luiz.
I agree with you. It's interesting, though, because, you know, these players, when we played our weakened 11 in the Europa League group stage, they looked great, you know? I mean, these players were much better than the first team.
Playing Newcastle. We're playing a Premier League team.
It's a Premier League team. And I think we saw some of them kind of hit the buffers a bit in that respect. Mm. I agree about Luiz. I think it's a really interesting one because I'm not convinced that on the pitch he's really done anything hugely wrong to sort of warrant, you know, being out the side. It almost feels like it's a strategic decision, you know, in that he's not the long term, he's not going to be here beyond the end of the season. But whenever I see him play, and it was the same in this game actually, I'm always like, well, he does bring something different. I mean, that long range of passing, which he showed off a couple of times, I think in the first half particularly, it is a great tool to have. So, I mean, do you think he is kind of going to sit out the rest of the Premier League campaign, or do you think he's in with a shout of winning a place back?
I think he still has a role to play. I do. And I think this season, I know he hasn't played as much as he did last season, and therefore there's less room for mistakes, but I think he's been fine this season, you know? I don't think he's been bad. I think there's just a sort of this natural, I mean, he was injured for a little bit, wasn't he? And he had the head injury, and, you know, there's a sort of natural leaning towards Rob Holding, who's going to be here for a while because he's just signed a new contract, as David Ornstein has reported in The Athletic this morning. So I think those things have us leaning more towards a player who might be part of the future. But I think Luiz has got a role to play between now and the end of the season, for sure.
Yeah, and playing, it's interesting, you know, his first year at Arsenal, he played a lot on the left-hand side, but this season we've seen him a bit more on the right, naturally, with Marie and Gabriel having arrived. I mean, I was just looking at the numbers. Holding started 13 Premier League games. Luiz has started 6. So, you know, there definitely has been a transition there. But I agree with you. Of the players who came in, who you would be sort of hoping to impress, I think he was the only one that really did. And it's one of those games where it just kind of confirms the way the momentum is going, you know, and that actually later in the match, when we put on kind of our, inverted commas, first choice attack for the time being, I think is when we looked our most dangerous.
Well, for sure. I mean, let's talk a little bit about Willock and Nelson, because they're two promising young players who have maybe just sort of hit that a plateau, I guess, in their development at this level, where you can say, okay, look, a loan would do them good. They could go and play somewhere else. They could come back and be better. Or are they at a point where you think, okay, you've had your chances, it hasn't really worked out, we should be thinking about maybe the next step or the next, you know, phase in the team's rebuild? You know, not every young player is going to come through. I think you look at Smith Rowe and what he's done, Saka, what he's done. I'm not sure Nelson has had quite as many chances because he's been a bit in and out. Joe Willock has been, you know, a sub mainly under Mikel Arteta. He did have a lot of appearances last season, 44 appearances, but not many of those were starts, you know? You know, where do you stand on those two guys? You know, I think sometimes we can be a bit quick to write off young players, but I do wonder if they can become what we want them to become with fleeting appearances here and there.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Willock had a great period, didn't he, in the autumn in the Europa League, and we were all talking about him as a potential solution in the Premier League. I thought this was a really bad night for him, actually.
I don't think it was quite as bad as it looked, which is a weird thing to say. I know it didn't come across as a great performance. I think there were a couple of moments early in the second half where he was penalised for fouls, which just were not fouls, and he had that good header on target. But I'm not quite sure what he is in terms of a player, you know?
And I personally, I don't think this role in a kind of double pivot, you know, next to Elneny, I just don't think that's ever quite going to suit him. He is a kind of weird player who doesn't really fit any system. I've compared him to Abu Diaby in the past, and I think to a certain extent, you know, Julio Baptista had the same thing, where it's like, what are you? You're not a midfielder. You're not a forward. You're sort of someone who I think has to be granted freedom. And I think he can only really get that as sort of the most advanced of a midfield three, which he wasn't really on the night. And I kind of have this hunch that he's a player around whom your system almost needs to be constructed. His role needs to be very, very central to it. And my suspicion is that Arsenal, he's probably not ever going to be that guy at Arsenal.
No. There's an incompatibility, isn't there, between what we want to do or how we want to play and what Joe Willock can bring. And I think he's got some real talent. I think there's, you know, he's a great athlete. I think he can finish. He can get in good positions. You know, he does have a fair amount of goals to his name, given how little he's played. You know, he can score goals. He can pop up. He's got good timing in the box, you know, and I think at 20, 21 years of age, maybe the finishing isn't quite as good as it can be. But the fact he can get himself in those positions, I think I've said before that the timing of his runs into the box reminds me a little bit of Aaron Ramsey.
Yeah.
He's just a little bit inconsistent in front of goal.
Yeah, and he's not a continuity guy.
No.
You know, he's not a guy who is incredibly technically secure. But kind of with that comes that sort of element of chaos and bringing the unexpected that I think can be really dangerous. I think him and Nelson are at a really kind of similar points in their development. And how I feel about what we should do with them is sort of very linked. I think they need to play.
Mm.
And I think they need to play at Premier League level, really, for them to kick on, for them to go to the next stage. And there are lots of ways you could achieve that. You know, you could send them on loan, which I think would be a really good move if Arsenal can find the space in the squad to do that. I just see it as beneficial on every count. I mean, either, you know, they get experience and perhaps they return to Arsenal as better players, or I think that exposure could augment their transfer value.
Yeah.
So I would be sort of in favour of that. But I do see the argument that if someone comes and offers you a really substantial sum of money for one of those players, it's tempting to take it. And I think Arsenal, something Liverpool do very smartly is, I hate, you know, Liverpool, we're always talking about what Liverpool do, but they work in things like buyback clauses, or they work in a high percentage sell-ons. So even if they sell a player, they kind of protect themselves against that player going on and becoming a star. And I think that's quite a smart way to work. And I think, you know, Arsenal shouldn't be afraid to do that, because it always gives you the option down the line.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you think?
I think both of them need a loan, for sure. And I think you're right. If the right offer comes in for them, you know, you'd be tempted to sell, because, you know, yeah, we have to learn to sell at the right time with certain players or with certain young players. You know, even someone like Eddie Nketiah, who hasn't really played in the last few weeks at all. I think Arteta said in his press conference today he's not going anywhere in the January window, despite some rumours. I don't know how they started or anything like that. But, you know, he's another one, because he's heading towards the last 12 months of his contract, where you can see the benefit of, okay, well, look, we've got X amount out of him. We've developed him to a certain point. I mean, I think this is the difference between some of the young players that we've let go in the past, in that Joe Willock has what? How many appearances for Arsenal? I can't, you know, must be what, 60-odd, 70-odd appearances for Arsenal?
Yeah,
so, you know, his stock will be an awful lot higher. Reece Nelson, maybe a few less than that. But, you know, these are guys who've had first-team exposure, and if we are going to move them on, if we are going to sell them, then they've got some sort of stock in the bank, if you like. Nelson has nearly 50 appearances for Arsenal. So, you know, it's not like young players in the past who've gone, who've barely made a breakthrough into the first team. The fact that they do have this first team experience means that they are more valuable.
Is there a fear that... I'm very coffee today. Is there a risk that... that's a bad thing to say at the moment, isn't it? Is there a risk that these players' value will diminish? Like, do you foresee... You know, is there an argument that you've got to sell Joe Willock now because in 6 months he'll be worth less?
I don't know. I don't know that it would fluctuate that much, would it, in 6 months? Or if you let Joe Willock go for a loan, on loan to somewhere and he plays quite well, you know, the upside of that is that his value could increase over the over the course of the next few months. I don't know. I mean, I just feel like we're in a place with those two guys where we can see that there's a gap, isn't there, between Smith Rowe and Saka and Willock and Nelson. And Nketiah, I think, as well, you put into that bracket.
Yeah, and I actually think, you know, Nketiah, talk about his future. I know Arteta knocked it down today in his press conference. I wonder how much that might have to do with what happened to Martinelli. You know, that shows you,
yeah,
if Martinelli's fit, I think it's trickier for Nketiah to get a game time. If he's not, he might get one or two here and there. So, yeah, I think Willock and Nelson, I would like to see them play more often and I would like to see them go on loan. I thought that about Reece Nelson in the summer. Hopefully he does get that move because, yeah, I just worry that they're not going to kick on if they don't get minutes. Mm.
So the first substitution that we made was after 55 minutes, which is pretty early.
Mm-hmm.
It was Emile Smith-Rowe coming on for Reece Nelson. I think Nelson started the game quite brightly. He had a good shot in the opening couple of minutes and there was a chance where I think if he'd been a bit more match fit and match sharp, he might have taken with his first touch rather than take a touch and get crowded out. But, you know, it's little moments like that where, you know, you can show a bit of quality. If Nelson takes that first time and puts it in the back of the net, we're having a different conversation about him today.
Sure.
You only get so many chances, though, as a young player. And I think it was quite telling that Smith Rowe was the first guy to come on and the guy that Arteta turned to in order to get a bit more control on the game.
Yeah, I mean, what struck me about Smith Rowe in this game is just his economy of touch on the ball. You know, the willingness to only take one touch or only take two touches. The speed at which he gets it and gives it improves Arsenal dramatically. I mean, his movement helps as well. He's got fantastic movement. But if you sort of ask me to compare and contrast him with the players who are on the pitch before him, I do just think it's that economy in his movement, in his what he does with the ball that makes him stand out. And yeah, I think it says everything about what Arteta thinks about what he offers the team at the moment, that he was the first name off the bench with some big experienced names on there.
Yeah, for sure. And then, of course, we bring on Saka and we bring on Granit Xhaka. And I have to say, Xhaka was really good, really good in this game. You know, it was quite funny. At one point, he was complaining to Elneny about passing it backwards. And, you know, that's an accusation that's been levelled at Xhaka a few times. But
the glass house around him shattering.
Hello, Mr. Pot. It's me, Mr. Kettle. You know, it was quite interesting to see him come on, though, and really provide forward momentum and incision in his passing, incisiveness, I should say, in his passing. You know, maybe it suited him in a way because of the state of the game and the way Newcastle were playing. He's always going to get a lot of the ball, but I thought he was really good. And of course, when you bring on, you know, Saka, you bring on Xhaka, you bring on Smith Rowe, the dynamic is different. It's different. And I think Newcastle had a bit more to deal with at that point.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I don't know to what extent Xhaka stood out because he was better than what was on before, but I thought he made a really big difference. It also helped the fact that he had someone like Smith Rowe to hit. You know, I think people being available is a big part of the issue. But yeah, Xhaka was really good and Smith Rowe was really good. And then Saka, I mean, you know, by the end of that...
Do we take it for granted that, you know, he's just going to come on and make things better?
What, Bukayo Saka?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's just like, oh, yeah, there he is. He's on now. He's just going to make it better because, you know, he's... you know, it's not, Xhaka comes on and we go, oh, look, Xhaka did this. And maybe it's because it's kind of unusual for Xhaka to come off the bench. Do you know what I mean? He's usually starting.
Really unusual. Yeah. Really unusual. You know? Yeah, I think we do take it for granted. I mean, the guy's, you know, less than 20 years old, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he's...
That makes him 19,
I think so, yeah. But he has a seniority about the way he plays, the way he takes responsibility. Maybe we do take it for granted. I mean, I honestly think when we reflect on 2020 for Arsenal, you know, we always talk about, well, I suppose the big high was the FA Cup win, and that's certainly true. But I think probably second on that list is getting Bukayo Saka to sign a new contract.
Yeah.
I think that's so important to the future of the club and clearly the present as well.
Can I ask you what you thought of Nicolas Pepe in this game?
Yeah, you can. I mean... kind of more of the same for me. I mean, what struck me is I thought his finishing and his shooting was less good than it often is. You know, normally what's quite impressive about Pepe is that however much he might sort of dally around with the ball here and there, when it comes to him, a decent area, he invariably hits the target. I thought that was a little bit less so the case against Newcastle. As well, you know, just the sort of economy point, something I've been thinking about Pepe is, you know, you reflect on that brilliant goal that we scored against West Brom, those kind of one-touch, pass-and-move goals, and I can't picture Pepe in that. I just can't. He wants to do too much with the ball for that to happen at that kind of synaptic speed. What did you think of him?
I was... kind of encouraged by the way that he played. Like, I know a lot of stuff doesn't come off, but, you know, he had more dribbles than anyone else. I think he had 4 key passes, something like that. He'd 5 shots.
I thought he was better than Nelson and dribbles. Better than Willian,
yeah,
for sure.
Well, listen, let's not get started on that in part one. We'll wait for part two. You know, he worked hard. I thought he did his defensive work well.
It's his cross for Joe Willock's header.
Yeah, you know, he made that chance for Willock. He dribbled well. He was fouled often, you know, which showed that there were moments where you could see him kind of trying to burst through the lines the way that, you know, we've spoken about Wilshere and Thomas Rosicki as players who used to be able to do that, and we don't really have that in the team. I saw him try that more than once. So I think there were positive elements to his game, but like you, the finishing, the couple of positions that he got himself into where I was going, oh yeah, you know, hit one here, and he didn't quite connect. I think that's what let him down more than anything else. But if I were Mikel Arteta, I'm not saying that this is going to be a player who's worth the money we paid for him, or it's all going to work out for him or anything like that. But if I were Mikel Arteta, I would be encouraged by that performance. Compared to some of the ones that we've seen from him in the not-too-distant past.
Yeah. I mean, if there are 4 spots in the sort of front 4 available, I know who my first 5 are. You know, they're kind of Saka, Smith-Rowe, Martinelli, Aubameyang, Lacazette. And 6th for me is Pepe. You know, he's the next guy for me to come into that unit, wherever it might be. And with all the questions of kind of how do we find an opportunity to rest Smith Rowe? What's the alternative? Every time I think about it, I'm like, well, Pepe comes in, plays on the right, and you play Saka through the middle as a kind of number 10. Like, I think that is, you know, I mean, it does not solve the problem of how do you give Saka a rest, but, you know, it's a solution.
Yeah. Okay. So look, we go to extra time and we have Bernd Leno to thank for what was a sensational save from Andy Carroll. Newcastle kind of exposed us on the break a little bit, didn't they? And it was a good save, a good initial save. And then the fingertips when Carroll was basically trying to take his head off.
Yeah.
Were really quite something. I thought that was really brave because Carroll, if he'd, you know, I don't think he really cared if he hit ball and head, just head. He was just having a go at whatever was there.
Yeah, it's one of those where he probably is deliberately taking a swing at it, thinking, well, this will make the keeper duck out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really brave, brilliant goalkeeping from Leno. The first save is good. The second one, to sort of spring up and get the ball away, fantastic. And that was the game right there. And also, this was a crazy 30 seconds, wasn't it? Because Leno chucks the ball out, and suddenly Emil Smith-Rowe's seeing red.
I mean, That was mad. That was just mad.
Yeah, I mean, it was a red card for a scream, wasn't it? Like, I think the player's scream made the referee's decision. Ah! Yeah.
Yeah.
I honestly do. Like, and I wonder, like, in a stadium full of fans, does that get heard and does it matter?
I was wondering the same thing. Like, he would not have heard the... Ah! If the fans had been in the stadium, maybe the linesman would have heard it. And I think that's what he based his decision on. 100% he based his decision on the fact that the player screamed. And I can understand it because it was, you know, when I heard it, I was like, oh, fuck, what's happened here? Like, he must be really badly injured for him to scream like that. And then you see the replays.
And thankfully, I mean, listen, I've been very critical of VAR and I still prefer football without it, but thankfully on that occasion, it served us well.
Well, Zach Harris asked us, he says, VAR clearly has issues and you both have shown a distaste for it, but I view it as a way of avoiding bad calls that clearly change the game. Did yesterday's use of it reverse the incorrect red card for Smith Rowe change your opinion on VAR? And I think one of the phrases or one of the things you hear all the time when people talk about VAR is the what are the three words? Clear and obvious. A clear and obvious error. And if you can use VAR to deal with situations like this where a ref clearly, definitely, 100% got something wrong in a split second, which can happen to referees. I'm not being hugely critical here, despite the fact he fell for the antics of Screamy Joe. You know, if you can, it would be unfair, clearly, for Smith Rowe to have been sent off for that because it wasn't a red card. It wasn't even a yellow card, really, as far as I can tell. I think he just gave the yellow card to kind of cover his own arse a little bit.
Yeah.
So if you can use VAR for that, you know, I don't know that too many people would have a problem with it. It's the minutiae of, like, is his, like, pube offside or is his elbow offside or is, you know, those kind of things, which obviously aren't clear and obvious to anyone. You know, that's by their very definition. If you're looking at a toenail being offside, it's not clear and obvious. So, you know, how do you find the balance or where do you draw the line between what can be seen by VAR and what can't be seen by VAR? You know,
so do you think we should have had a penalty in this game?
It was a penalty. Clark put his foot out. It caught Aubameyang. He went down. Penalty, 100%.
And the review was done in a few seconds.
Exactly. I mean, if that was Man United, they'd have had about 8 penalties.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I mean, I think it's interesting with VAR. It's kind of absolutist. You know, you have to be entirely for it or entirely against it, whereas I think it's a more nuanced thing than that, and it's the application of it in different situations. No one could look at what happened to Smith Rowe and say, well, I disagree, that was a bad thing, you know. But on balance, I think it brings more negatives than positives, but there was a big positive for Arsenal, certainly, on that, in that instance.
Well, of course, and Smith Rowe stayed on, and Smith Rowe opened the scoring, and quite an interesting goal again, that little combination, that trio of Smith Rowe, Saka, Lacazette. You know, Saka played the ball to Lacazette, good header on, and Smith Rowe was there. Great finish, great touch, great finish. You know, I think one of the really interesting things about Emil Smith Rowe is that from the start, since he began to play in the first team, and I include some preseason in this as well, he produces. He's got end product. He scores goals, which at a young age is really, really impressive. Because I remember Arsene Wenger talking about Cesc Fabregas a bit, and he sort of said, look, when a player gets to about 21, 22, they start to score goals. you know, and I think that very much happened with Cesc, maybe a little bit earlier. It's not that he didn't score goals, you know, but he really became a goal scorer as he matured a bit, right? But Smith Rowe, one of the most difficult things to do in football is score goals, and he does it and he makes it look really natural. And I think he has, is it 4 assists and 2 goals in about 400 first team minutes this season? Mm-hmm. That is a lot of end product for a 20-year-old who has barely played for the first team. I know he had a good loan spell at Huddersfield and everything else, but I, you know, to me, this is what really excites me about Emile Smith Rowe. I mean, we can all see the talent, we can all see the ability that he has, but the fact that he is producing at this level so quickly is really, really exciting.
It is. And, you know, he shares that with Martinelli and Saka, and I think that's what makes them so special and so exciting. I actually think this is a really lovely goal. You know, I mean, it comes from Smith Rowe pinching the ball, actually, off a Newcastle defender.
It's a heavy touch, wasn't there? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Loose touch. But the fact that he gives it to Saka and is immediately on his bike, again, it is reminiscent of that kind of movement against West Brom. Lacazette, who was our extra time sub. He does pretty well. It's a good little header, but it's the movement from Smith Rowe that makes it. And then again, economy, you know, one touch, bang, and you couldn't execute that finish more perfectly.
Brilliant.
From a technical perspective. And actually, like, the first touches in the West Brom goal, we talked about that first touch with the outside of his left boot to bring the ball under control. And in this instance, I think it's the shoulder he brings it down on, just to kind of let it run in front of him across his body. And it's absolutely immaculate. I mean, he is very, very clean and very, very tidy. And yeah, just a brilliant goal. And I think one that kind of crowns this recent run of games from him. He's been superb, and he'll be in the starting lineup, won't he, against Palace on Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be. He's just, you know, there are times a player comes in and, you know, they do well, but you can sort of say, well, you know, you could see how he might use a more experienced player there. But like when a player comes in and literally bangs down the door the way Smith Rowe has in the last couple of weeks, you don't really have a great deal of choice but to play him. No. And, I think we do have to manage him. We do have to be careful. We do have to be sensible, you know, that we don't physically do him in, you know, by playing him game after game after game.
It'd be true of any 19-year-old, but particularly 20, one with his history.
20,
sorry.
No, it is. So, you know, there's going to be that moment where Smith Rowe isn't in the starting lineup, despite the fact he's played well, and people are going to despair at that. But we have to have some common sense in how he's used.
I think the degree of despair will be measured by how he's replaced and
who replaces him, of course, yeah.
But there is something happening here. Like, you know, having these guys, Saka and Smith Rowe, who are prepared to run beyond the striker, Lacazette seemingly understanding that and sort of having a grip on his role in it. There is something there to build on. And I do think, I said it earlier, but as soon as Arsenal went to that kind of setup, I felt more confident in this game. And also great news as well that we got the second goal and Aubameyang got himself a goal from over.
Yeah, I mean, he badly needed a goal. He really did. I know he scored against Southampton, but he really needs a goal. That's why he was in the team, obviously, you know, to see if he can not break the drought, but just to sort of rebuild some confidence. And I was worried a little bit because there were some chances. Kieran Tierney did his absolute best, didn't he, to give him a couple of good crosses and everything else. But in the end, he provided him a chance that he just couldn't miss. And the kind of chance where, if you look at the first goal that Smith Rowe scores, Aubameyang is in this kind of inside left position, and he doesn't really make a run into the box. Whether he feels confident or whether the move happens a bit too quickly for him, or, you know, he feels like Smith Rowe is going to score, he doesn't need to. I'm not quite sure. But in this instance, you know, look where he is, and he's still starting from that left-hand side position. I think that's a really interesting aspect to this goal. Really good combination between Xhaka and Tierney. Tierney provides the cross and Aubameyang gets the goal.
It's 1-2, isn't it?
Yeah.
And great to see Aubameyang put it away. And I'm just watching it back now, and great to see Aubameyang smile like that, to be honest. I mean, it has feels like it's been a little while since we've seen that exuberance, you know, that kind of joy from him. And I think that's a good sign, hopefully.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think we said in the last episode, didn't we, that, you know, you can maybe read a bit too much into a striker being unhappy when he doesn't score. Is he unhappy at the fact he's not scoring, or is there something more to it than that? Is there something more serious going on, blah, blah, blah? For me, it was always just about Aubameyang not scoring. That's what he wants to do. He gets on the score sheet, he's smiling, he's happy. You know, he's happy for his teammates in the game against West Brom as well. So, you know, it really is just about him getting back on the score sheet, rebuilding that confidence, and hopefully, you know, 2 goals in 9 is quite a rare occurrence for Aubameyang, and hopefully this kind of run is behind him now and he can get on the score sheet with a bit more frequency.
Yeah, I mean, and depending what news we get on Martinelli, I think his place in the team might be all the more kind of secure. And one thing I noticed in the first half, by the way, I was sort of watching Aubameyang and watching his movement. At no point was he more lively in the penalty box than when Tierney had the ball.
Well, why wouldn't you be?
Yeah, exactly. When Tierney had the ball, even if Tierney had the defender in front of him, if it was sort of prior to Tierney's kind of, you know, knock and cross, Aubameyang was on the move. And it's because you know exactly what Tierney's going to do. He's going to get past his man. He's going to deliver. And for a striker, that's invaluable. That's gold dust. And no surprise that ultimately it was Tierney who laid on the goal for him. I mean, you can tell Aubameyang, he smells goals when Tierney's got the ball.
Magnifique! That's the man. He is.
I mean, 120 minutes apiece for Ober and Tierney. But if there are any two players in the squad that could handle it, I guess it might be those two.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay, well, look, there we go. Arsenal 2, Newcastle 0. I think there were things to be positive about. There are a couple of things, obviously, that didn't quite work out as well as we might like that we'll touch on in part two. We've got some questions about those. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to talk about from the weekend?
Not so much, really. I mean, I actually, it's obviously a shame without fans, but I quite enjoyed FA Cup third round weekend. I mean, it was quite a good draw. There were quite a lot of sort of, you know, potential giant killings. Sadly, Marine AFC couldn't produce the shock that I dreamed they would, although it was great to see Joe Hart get a fright. Did you watch that game?
I didn't, no. I mean, I'm, you know, life's too short to watch Tottenham, James.
Well, there were a couple of funny things about it. First, that Marine very nearly took the lead. They had a shot from 30 yards that Joe Hart clearly thought was going over, and it struck the bar.
Right.
Very nearly embarrassed him, and that was very funny. It was also very funny watching their striker up front, I think he's called Vinicius, who they've got on loan from Portugal, score 2 tap-ins from like a combined distance of like
the length of Eddie Nketiah.
Yeah, something like that. They were Eddie Nketiah range goals, but he celebrated them against a team from the 7th tier, I believe, of English football, like he had scored in sort of a World Cup final. Like, he, after one of them, he did a sort of arms folded Mbappe pose after scoring from a yard against Marine AFC. So that was quite funny. But yeah, glad to see us in the draw for the fourth round. And when is the draw? Is
fourth and fifth round. The draw is being made tonight, I believe.
No.
Yeah, they're doing the, I don't know quite why they're doing that, but maybe just to cut down on hot balls. I'm not quite sure.
I have no idea.
Maybe there's
it's
shortage.
A COVID thing. You're not allowed to grab balls.
Yeah, shortage of hot balls these days. Leeds United did get beaten as well by Crawley Town. So that's that was an interesting result.
It was kind of amazing. Yeah, 3-0 as well. I mean, Leeds are sort of fascinating team. You never know what you're going to get from them. Brighton in the Premier League very nearly lost. They went through on penalties against someone Welsh. I forget who. But yeah, anyway, it was quite...
Alan Jones?
It was Alan Jones. Alan Jones beat Brighton on penalties.
Very good.
Newport County, that was it.
There you go.
But yeah, it was all in all quite an entertaining weekend. And, you know, it's a competition that has been very kind to us in the past. Who knows?
Who knows? All right, let's take a break. Get a cuppa, get an orange Kit Kat, a regular Kit Kat if you want. They've all kinds of Kit Kats now.
Are we sponsored by Kit Kat now?
Not today, but, you know, if I keep mentioning them, maybe they'll...
If John Kit Kat is listening,
yeah,
please get in touch.
Please get in touch. We like your range of products. They've got all kinds of flavors now. There's mint, there's hazelnut, there's lemon drizzle Kit Kat. There's all
Do you
kinds.
Like the chunky Kit Kats?
No.
Really?
I'm not mad for the chunky Kit Kat. No, I think it kind of takes away the very essence of a Kit Kat. They're not supposed to be
They're supposed
chunky.
To be snappable. And,
yeah, you know, that's... No, you know, it goes
it's
against
snap,
the ethos of the Kit Kat. Yeah, John Kit Kat did not fucking set up that company to make giant, like, mutant Kit Kats. He didn't.
Yeah.
Someone's you know, taken it to
I'm just
a
picturing
different
you,
level.
Like, in a local shop holding a load of Kit Kat chunkies. Going, like, John Kit Kat didn't die for this. Like, what's this about?
Right. Let's
have a break before this gets any weirder.
Yeah, let's do that. And we've got a little bit of doom and gloom, I guess, to start with, but we can pick it up as we go along in the questions that you're going to provide us in part two, which comes up right after this.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arseblog. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arseblog, and also on the Arseblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arseblog member on Patreon. Right, we got to get into this one because it's not quite the elephant in the room, but it's a subject which has exercised many people over the course of the weekend. On the Discord, Stickers asks, realistically, what can be done with/about Willian? And a couple of arsens on Twitter, who's couple of arsens, says, morning chaps, good morning. He says, do you think it's possible Willian himself feels his move to Arsenal was a mistake just as much as the rest of the planet does? If that's the case, is there hope the player will push for a move in the summer?
Yes. How do you solve a problem like Willian? That would be his song if there were crowds. Well, I doubt it would be as polite as that, actually.
I'm not sure it would be quite as tuneful.
Yeah, I did say during the game that, you know, if the BBC were really committed to authenticity on the sound, they should have replied booing when Willian went off. Oh. I do suspect in a full stadium he would be on the end of a lot of stick right now.
I think that's true. Which isn't to say that's something I would advocate or anything like that. But
maybe also maybe that isn't true. Like when I went to the Europa League game, the first game with fans, and granted that was a very special circumstance, I was really surprised by the relative warmth of the reception for Willian. And I thought maybe the negativity is a kind of is amplified on social media, whereas in stadiums, the tendency would be to be behind the team for that 90
minutes.
Yeah,
look, I think that's true to a large extent, that what happens online can feel a lot more intense than real life, you know?
Yeah.
But I do think the fact that he's had one good game for us since he arrived would have him in a I think I said on the blog the other day, he's very close to reaching a point of no return for many fans, and I think for many fans he's gone beyond that already, you know, just from talking to people on Twitter and everything else.
Yeah,
that you know, nobody is looking at this move as in any way successful for the club, for the player himself. There's no redeeming features to it. It doesn't feel like there are any redeeming features to it at this moment in time. But the question about what do we do about it? I mean, I understood. I didn't like it, but I understood why Mikel Arteta picked him. Because, you know, he has, and the club have, made a significant investment of money in this player over the course of another 2.5 years. Mm. And I guess there's an attempt to extract some value from it. But I do wonder, at what point does somebody have to hold their hands up and say, this is not working. This is just not sustainable, you know?
If it was a one-year deal, then you would maybe be doing that at this point.
Yeah,
you'd
but
be saying
it's not, though.
Exactly. And so, you know, with Luiz, for example, you know, there's a sense in which it's like, well, he's not the man for the future, therefore we're going to pick other people. With Willian, it's a 3-year commitment. So tempting though it is, and much though I understand the people not wanting to see him play for Arsenal, I do completely appreciate that for Mikel Arteta, he's got a problem on his hands, because either he needs to find a way to get him off the books, which is laced with its own difficulties, or he has to somehow make this work. And it doesn't, I agree with you, it doesn't look like working at all. And I think even Willian's harshest critics during his time at Chelsea, I personally think would be surprised by the scale of which this is not working, you know, the extent to which it's not working.
Yeah, like, I didn't think he would be this bad.
No, like, I've used the comparison of Luiz in the past. Like, Luiz has been so much better than Willian, you know, at this point.
I'm trying to be really fair here, right?
Yeah.
I don't particularly, like, there's nothing to like about Willian at Arsenal. Okay, I'm finding it very difficult. I see him on the pitch and my heart sinks. Like, it sucks out something of the enjoyment that I have for watching my team play when I see him in there. And it's quite, I don't know quite how to express it, but it makes, I just don't like it. I don't like the look. There's nothing about it I like, okay?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to make that clear. It impacts me emotionally in a weird way. But trying to be fair, he is or was certainly a better player than we're seeing. And was at Chelsea a better player than we're seeing.
For sure.
So is this a guy coasting? Because he's got a big contract. He can stay in London. He's got 3 years. He feels nice and safe. Mm-hmm. He's got the backing of a manager who wanted him. And sort of knowing that the manager wants you, I wonder if there's an inclination on Arteta's part to make it work, you know, because he was advocating for the deal, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but is this a guy? Is it his motivation? Is it his confidence? Is it, you know, what is it? Or is it a case that the Willian that he used to be is what he was And what we're seeing is now what he is.
Listen, I just don't believe the speed of decline could be that sharp. It's the same thing, I think, with Aubameyang. You know, I kind of can't quite believe that as of the final day of last season, he was a really good player, and now he's just not. Now, of course, there could be things underlying that. You know, he could be in decline, but nothing that doesn't, I think, explain quite how sharp and quite how dramatic it is. I suppose for the motivation question, I think, of course, there can be factors that make a player feel more comfortable or more less motivated. I mean, look at how people perform in the final years of their contract, for example. You know, there's a security that can influence performance. I don't really buy the narrative that, like, professional athletes don't try. Like, I find that implausible, to be honest with you. I think, of course, they're trying. But I think there might be subconscious factors, you know?
Yeah.
But even that, I mean, the question of, like, is he just comfortable? I suppose I'd ask you the question, does he look happy? And watching him against Newcastle, I'm thinking, no, he's not. I don't think he's like, well, I turned in that hour and I was shit, but... Yeah.
Like, I don't think he's sort of sauntering off and feeling pleased
with
himself.
If he was going off, like, laughing and high-fiving everybody, I'd be really worried. Mm. You know what I mean? So in answer to the first question, which was, does Willian regret his move? From a sporting perspective, he has to.
Yeah. I mean, it is possible sometimes for a move just not to work.
Yeah.
For no particular reason other than whatever. A player arrives and he loses form, and then it becomes really difficult to win the trust of fans back or the manager back or whatever it is. It might just be that this is the wrong move.
Yeah, for signing a player is about chemistry. It's about, you know, projecting how one player is going to interact on the field with 10 others. There are so many variables within that that it inevitably sometimes it just doesn't work. I think it is actually sort of a head scratcher, because everyone can say Willian's been bad, but explaining why he's been bad, how he's been, you know, what has changed to make him so bad, I think is genuinely quite tricky.
Do you think it's exacerbated by, maybe exacerbated is the wrong word, but we see Bukayo Saka come in and play from the right-hand side, and we see Emile Smith-Rowe come in and play with the kind of enthusiasm and bravery that, you know, an experienced player should be able to produce. You know, somebody who's done it at Premier League level for 7 or 8 seasons, who's won the title, who's won the Europa League, who's won all kinds of cups with Chelsea. I mean, he is a guy who has won a lot and been part of teams which have won. So it's not a question that, like, you know, he's capable of, A, the performance level, and B, the mentality to be part of a team that wins things. But, you know, when we see these young guys come in who look just miles better, I mean, is there a point at which Willian might say, and his goddamn agent might say, and the club and the manager and the technical director might just say, this was a mistake. We gave it a try, didn't work. We now have to find a way out. Because Arsenal cannot carry, and I think this is the key word here, they cannot carry Willian on the pitch, or the financial aspect of his signing off the pitch, for another 2.5 years. It's just impossible. If it's this bad after 6 months, if things don't improve in any significant way, what's it going to be like in 6 months' time or a year's time when he's, you know, it is a really tricky one.
I think that has to be an option. It has to be a possibility, because I don't think Willian, you know, he's not David Luiz. He's not a bad egg. He's not a guy who's a troublemaker. Or I know there were those rumours, but I honestly don't think there was anything behind those about, you know, them sort of wanting Arteta out. I never heard that from anywhere authoritative. And I think that he will want to play, and I think he will want to, you know, be proud of his of what he does professionally. So I think that if things carry on as they are, and I see no signs that they're not going to, then maybe that will become a possibility. Probably not in this window, but maybe in the next one. I have to say, going into the Newcastle game, I was quite intrigued to see what Willian might do in the position that he was picked as a number 10, because, you know, I reflect on that Sheffield United game where we turned it round late on. He operated in that position. If I think of the Everton game away from home, when he sort of in the second half was much better, he was drifting infield off the left flank to those areas. And I've heard Tim Steelman many times, who knows Willian quite well and knows the way he plays, say, look, he's a winger and, you know, he plays wide and that's it. But it's not unheard of for a player in their 30s who has been a wide player to move into a central area, because there are kind of things physically about that that might make, you know, if they lose some of their sprint power, it might help them in some ways. But it just didn't happen for him at all.
No.
You know, against Newcastle.
No, and I tend to agree with Tim on this one, in that, you know, if you buy a player who's played his entire career in one position and then you look for him to be the difference in a completely different position, I don't know. I'm not saying it's unfair on the player, and I'm not trying to excuse his performance levels, but I would question the decision-making or the team selections in those regards.
I mean, I think he was bought to play on the right anyway. I think he was clearly signed because there wasn't faith in Pepe.
Mm.
But I don't blame them trying something different with him, given how much it hasn't worked. I don't know, actually. Like, I know that everybody hates Willian, but I don't know, for some reason he doesn't offend me quite so much. And I do genuinely feel sort of more sad about the situation. You know, it's just such a waste of money and resource. It's been a disaster for him personally. I would love to believe, like, I personally, I would love to believe that there was a sort of positive resolution here, that there was a way of turning this round. But I just don't see where that's going to come from. And actually, with the form of Smith Rowe, with the form of Saka, he's going to get less and less game time, less opportunity to establish rhythm. I kind of only see it ending one way. And
which is what? That he sees out the remaining 2.5 years of his 200,000-odd a week contract.
Yeah.
That's the other aspect of this. I mean, I think you're right. It has been a disaster for him on the pitch, but it's been fucking tremendous for him elsewhere. You know, the deal, the deal has been great. Yeah. But look, I don't have any solution to this other than, you know, he sits it out, and on the opportunities, or when he is given the opportunity to play, he needs to perform. He needs to play better. And if he doesn't, then it's only going to end one way, or it should end in the summer.
Yeah. I don't know how they're going to extract performances from him. Like, I don't get the sense. Like, Mikel Arteta is giving him every chance, isn't he? I mean, he was the guy who came off the bench against West Brom. He started against Newcastle. Mm. I think when Arsenal are winning games in the next few weeks, I bet you see Willian come on, because I bet Mikel Arteta is trying to somehow ignite a spark on his player. I mean, there was a chance for him, wasn't there, in this game? Came to him on his left foot. Do you remember?
Yeah, it was really bad what he did.
Yeah.
Really bad.
Fired it way, 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 way over. I mean, to me, he just looks... I honestly don't know what to say about it. It's just sort of a bad situation.
Yeah.
And I actually think, if anything, if he serves any purpose at Arsenal, then it has to be the kind of final lesson, you know, of that kind of transfer strategy.
Yeah.
I know we've had plenty of opportunities to learn that lesson in the past, but genuinely, I am starting to think maybe Willian has been kind of sent here to teach us something.
You know the way at Anfield, where the players come out of the tunnel and there's the sign that says, "This is Anfield."
This is Anfield, yeah.
Just above the manager's door at Arsenal, in either Highbury House or London Colney or wherever it might be, there should be a sign saying, "Never buy old cunts from Chelsea."
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's move on.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say about it, but there you go. What are your thoughts about Joe Willett? We've done that. This is an important question from Zach Martinez. Who is more handsome, Mikel Arteta or Pablo Marie?
It's a good question.
He's a handsome man, Pablo Marie.
He is a handsome man.
I mention it partly just to sort of open a discussion about Pablo Marie, but let's not overlook. Arsenal lost some handsome players in recent years, and it's good to kind of restore that balance a little bit.
Yes. But let's talk about him as a footballer, will we? Do you have a question about him in football terms, or should we just talk about him?
I don't, to be honest. I just want to talk about his looks. No, but I think I just wanted to talk about him generally. I know you wrote about him this morning, but I think he's done pretty well, hasn't he? I mean, what have you made of him?
I think he's been, like I said in the blog today, it's so far so good. You know, he's come in for Gabriel. You can see now that there's obviously a bit of a strategy going on in terms of who we have available to us in defence. So he wants a left-footed centre-half pretty much at all times, it seems.
Yeah.
Because we bought Marie in January of last year, and then we went out in the summer and we bought Gabriel, and you could look at that as we've bought a player to upgrade him, but it might be just that, you know, we've got Gabriel and we've got really solid backup in terms of Pablo Marie. I think he's very good in the air, in our box. I think he reads the game well. His stats when it comes to clearances are very good. His passing is not bad at all. The long passing, I'm not sure he's quite got his eye in yet.
There was
that
one
sense.
Brilliant pass against Newcastle.
Someone mentioned it to me. I think I saw it in the comments on Arsblog News. Could have been to Pepe, but
yeah,
I've seen
diagonal.
Him. Yeah, I've seen him look for, you know, the kind of ball down the line that you might associate with Granit Xhaka that he might play, or the one, for example, that David Luiz. One David Luiz played for Aubameyang.
Yes,
where he went over the top.
The channel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That kind of a pass where he just hasn't quite found his range yet. I think the sample size is really small. Still, he's only had 6 appearances this season, but, you know, he's played a part in the recent run of results that we've had. And Arteta talked well about him, as you would expect him to do. With most players, obviously, you know, we could go back to Willian and talk about what he said about Willian, and it's very much a manager protecting his player in public kind of stuff. But I've been cautiously impressed with Marie so far, and, you know, I think Gabriel is going to be back. We did have some questions about whether or not you bring him back in. Let's see. There was one.
Go on.
Let me see if I can find. Here's a really interesting one, actually, from Shatuk on Twitter, @Shatuk. And he says, goodly morning, chaps. Given Pablo Marie's strong run of games and Gabriel's position as our best player so far this season, in his opinion, is our case to be made for trying them in tandem? Have either of them played right centre back? And I think this is, I've seen a lot of people talk about this, and I think it's really interesting. Because, I'll let you have a go first and then I'll tell you why I think it's interesting.
Well, I think it's interesting because you never see two left-footed centre-halves, and you often see two right-footed centre-halves, and no one has any issue with it whatsoever.
Yeah.
I do think there is a reason for that, though, and I think that is that typically left-footed players are more one-footed, simply because, as a consequence of having their left foot, I think they're kind of specialists and they're less encouraged to be two-footed. If you think about it, like, most of our left-footed players have been super one-footed.
I think that's true of left-footed players. But maybe you notice it more because they are left-footed.
Maybe. I genuinely think that kind of a right-footed player, in order to stand out, is often encouraged to be able to go both ways or to be two-footed in a way that a left-footed player isn't.
Yeah.
So I don't know enough about... Like, if you want to play on that opposite side, you need to have a pass off that foot. Do you know what I mean?
I think
just as an option. Like, Luiz, I think, prefers playing from the left because of the way the game opens out for him. But you need to be able to pass it off your left so you don't get pressed only on one side and get stuck.
It's one thing rolling a right-footed pass across to your central defensive partner. It's a completely different thing when you need to clip a ball 30 yards into midfield or spray it out to one of the wings. Based on what I've seen so far from Pablo Marie and Gabriel, I would not be confident that they could do that with their right foot
If you think about if you're a left-footed centre-half playing on the right-hand side, imagine your fullback it's kind of 10, 15 yards ahead of you. They can't find an exit ball up the field. They play it back towards you. You know what I mean? It's sort of like you're in an awkward position where if you want to use your left foot, you've got to turn. We've seen the problems Granit Xhaka can have with that. Neither of these guys are David Luiz exactly. I don't see it, to be honest. Yeah. I think Pablo Mari looks like, unusually for an Arsenal signing, exactly what we have bought and signed him to be, which is the backup player to Gabriel. Mm-hmm. And I think he looks absolutely serviceable and ideal for that role. The only thing I would say is some players have, especially with defenders, they bring qualities that sort of offer a sense of calm to mm-hmm. defence, and that can often exceed their kind of technical attributes. You know, Per Mertesacker is kind of the obvious one, but there are other players where, you know, Vermaelen was a better footballer than most centre-halves we've had over the last 20 years, but he didn't have that thing of sort of, I don't know if it's organisation, I don't know if it's leadership, something that just kind of brings a bit of stability. And it does seem that Pablo Mari has some of that. That's my instinct off him. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I think an important part of his game, because I think there are issues, obviously, with his pace and his mobility, you know. In order to make up for those, you have to be good at reading the game. And if you can read the game and you can communicate, then you can transmit that sense of calm to your defenders and to your midfielders even. So, I kind of see a bit of that in the way that he plays. I think comparisons with Mertesacker are quite valid. Obviously, there are physical similarities, but just the way that they play the game, I think, is actually quite similar as well. I think what he is backup / competition for Gabriel. I think Gabriel probably fits the profile of a modern centre half a bit more than Pablo Mari. But if he's the guy you've got understudying, or he's the guy that you can play in cup games and Europa League games or whatever it might be, then I think what he's shown us in the last couple of weeks is that he's capable of that. I think there are going to be some moments with him. I think there's going to be a moment or two where the pace is exposed, or where he gets a little bit caught on the turn, or he makes a clumsy challenge or something like that. But I think that's par for the course with a player of his profile and of his provenance and his experience and everything else. But in terms of what you can realistically expect from a backup central defender, I don't know that you can get an awful lot more.
No, I agree. I think he's done. I think he's done pretty well.
Can I ask the next one then?
Go on.
Because it stays on central defenders. It comes from Chills on the Discord, and he says The Athletic is reporting that Holding has signed a new deal. Listening to the Statements podcast, which is one we did for our Patreon members, and I spoke to Elliot, Yankee Gunner, said Elliot was critical of us keeping players who will not win us a championship. Even though I agree with him in general, I still think extending Holding is the right thing to do. He can be kept around until we're one signing away from challenging for the title and then replaced. What are your thoughts, or just thoughts in general, on Holding signing a new deal?
I'm okay with it. I really am. I think he's been very consistent this season. He's played an awful lot of football. I kind of long-term see him as the Pablo Mari equivalent, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean, for the other side of the defence. I don't know if he's the guy, but I think he's got an important role in the squad to play. So, yeah, I'm pretty relaxed about it. I listened to the Statements podcast, and it's a great idea for a show. I really enjoy it. And I think Elliot makes a really good case for kind of like, you know, if Holding's not the guy who's going to win you the Premier League, why not sell him and make some money on him? But I suppose what I think about it is kind of twofold. I think, A, you still can sell Holding. Like, he's in his mid-20s now. I think he's got several more years in which his value might only increase, to be honest. I think his market value is probably pretty decent at this point. And giving a new contract protects that. Mm-hmm. But I also think there's a kind of thing of, I love the idea that we could attract the players now that could win us the Premier League. But I think within that, I don't know how realistic that is. I think Arsenal probably have to build just to get back into the top four, you know? And there are players who won't come with us all the way on that journey to the very top if we ever get there. And maybe Rob Holding's one of those. But I just don't know if it's realistic to be able to acquire those players at this point. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I feel like this has to happen in stages, and in the next sort of 3-year stage, I think he can be a part of it. Yeah. What do you think?
I don't really have a problem with it either. I think when you look at the collection of central defenders that we have, there's going to be a huge amount of natural attrition come this summer, and maybe towards the end of this month. Socrates is going to go. David Luiz is going to go. Shkodran Mustafi is going to go. I don't think Mavropanos comes back. Callum Chambers, I think we have some concerns there over, you know, how well he's going to recover from his cruciate, right? So you're left then in the summer with Gabriel, Pablo Marie, Rob Holding, and William Saliba, who we assume will come back. I think there was good clarity, actually, on the Saliba situation last week. Do you?
Yeah. I mean, Arsenal were very clear that they see him as part of the future. I noticed he was man of the match at the weekend. I mean, he's gone into a team who, from what I've seen, cannot defend for toffee. So he's got a lot of work on his hands.
He's going to be like one of those goalkeepers, you know, who's playing for
Rush goalie.
No, but like one of those goalkeepers who's playing for a bottom of the table side, who looks great because he's got a lot of shit to do. You know what I mean? I think this is going to be a good test for Saliba, and you know, he's going to have to do a lot of defending, which I think is part of what they want from him. So then you've got four central defenders, you know, with Chambers maybe, who might stay or who might go. So when it comes to Holding, I think he's 25. He's got a couple of years left on his contract. We talk about players in this situation a lot and say, right, make your decision. Do you sell him now or do you extend? And if you're extending, what are you going to get from them, or what are the downsides of extending? And I don't think that if we extend Holding and we then in a year's time or 18 months' time find ourselves in a position where maybe we've upgraded on him and he's not playing as much, I don't think we have an asset that is tanked by any means. We've got we've got an English player in his mid prime, you know, mid to late 20s for a centre half is the perfect age. And I think there will be a lot of takers for him. So it's not really about just protecting the investment. I think he can be a good player for us. To me, it's a fairly sensible decision given everything else that's going on.
Yeah, and I suppose what I was trying to say before about like having to do things in stages, you know, before Liverpool had Van Dijk and were the best team in the world, they had to be a team that got into the Champions League regularly. And in order to do that, they signed people like Joel Matip and Ragnar Klavan, you know, and they weren't going to be the guys who took them to the top, but they got them to the point where they were a Champions League club, they had bigger revenues, they could sell on some other assets, bring in Van Dijk. I do just think this might take more time, perhaps, than we envisage. And I think Holding can be a sort of steady presence for the next 3 years. What I would say when you list those centre-backs is I find it very hard to make a case for keeping Callum Chambers at this point.
Yeah, me too. Me too, but I think, you know, maybe for the duration of this season, like, he could be alone in January.
I think it really depends
who else goes. Like, Socrates is going to go this month. It looks like he's going to go to Genoa. He's going to go. Mustafi wasn't in the squad, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder if, you know, Kolasinac is gone. Mesut Ozil appears to be going. And
there is a little dressing room there's that gang little, of pals.
Yeah. So those three were like a little dressing room clique. And I do wonder if there might be some efforts made to move Mustafi on in January to give him a favourable deal, you know, go and play somewhere.
From what I understand, his situation is quite delicate and quite difficult because apparently footballers are a bit... And there could be incentive for him to go in January because footballers aren't particularly keen to be out of contract in the current economic climate without a club. You know, if you're a guy who would demand big money, There are no certainties, really. So if he can get some sort of long-term deal somewhere, you know, 3 or 4 years,
yeah,
I think in this climate, he's going to take that. It's just a question of when he can find it.
Yeah, and look, I think Arsenal would be happy to incentivize that move.
Yeah.
You know, in as much as they're not going to look for a great big fee for Mustafi with 6 months left on his contract, you know? So that's the only that's the only thing that gives me pause for thought about Chambers.
Mm.
You know, just in terms of if all of those go, then you've got Luiz and Holding, and then you've got Gabriel and Pablo Marie.
Pablo Marie.
And maybe just having one more player like Chambers who can play right centre half and probably can play left centre half as well, because, you know, most right-footed players can do that, then just for insurance purposes, you might keep him around.
I just sort of have this hunch that Holding and Chambers, I know Chambers is more versatile, but in my mind, they're kind of a similar spot in the squad.
Mm.
And I think if you've committed to one, there's a strong case for cutting ties with the other. But I take your point about the uncertainty. They can't make really decisions on their centre halves until they know exactly who's going in January.
Mm.
I did see an interesting question on the Discord about this. Let me just find it now.
No problem.
It was relating to the contract situation. So it's from Dazzy Pepper. Holding got a new contract. Who should get the next one?
Who should get the next one? Right. I think the one that I would go with first is
Willian. They get the Willian extension in the bag, a pre-contract agreement
exactly.
for another 3 years.
Emile Smith Rowe.
Okay.
He would be the next one, because I think he's got a contract for another couple of years.
Yeah.
But I think the smart thing to do would be to open discussions now and to get him committed in the same way that we got Saka committed. After that, I think I would look at Kieran Tierney.
I think you've got to be looking at Kieran Tierney by the end, around the end of the season. Quite a strange story, wasn't there, in the Telegraph about Napoli being interested in signing him? I know they were interested when we saw him from Celtic, but I'd be amazed if...
Listen, he is one of the unsellables, one of the few unsellables in this squad.
I suppose the only thing you would say is, like, is he a Champions League caliber player? And how, you know, how long can we not offer him that, you know?
Yeah, well, look, that's true, but I think that's down the road a little bit.
Celtic.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, that's part of his ambition at Arsenal and moving to the Premier League. He wants to be part of a Champions League club. So that's, you know, obviously that's something we have to manage, something that Arsenal as a football club have to be cognizant of. But I think if we want to get back there, he's going to be a big part of it. So,
yeah, he would be, I mean, Smith Rowe is a good one, yeah, and then he would be on my list as well. What's interesting is when you look at the squad, apart from those two, there aren't too many names.
No, there aren't. I mean, Martinelli we already did. We did this last summer, so we have that sorted out. Beyond that, maybe Leno?
Maybe Leno, but there aren't too many other names that you're like...
We have to
commit to this guy, or, you know, we shouldn't consider selling this guy rather than extending him. Which tells you, I think, a bit about the state of the squad.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of deals that are expiring and aren't going to be renewed, but they would be the ones for sure.
Tim Tara 33 on the Discord says, why did Arteta keep Ainsley Maitland-Niles instead of selling him for 20 million to Wolves if he isn't going to play him?
It was a very clever and forward-thinking way of punishing Ainsley Maitland-Niles to keep him at Arsenal. I am a bit confused about that. Like I say, I really think Tierney needs a rest sooner or later. And Ainsley is probably the closest thing we've got to a good left back, I would imagine, apart from Tierney. I mean, I did kind of think, is he going to play on Thursday? Is he going to play against Palace? You know, they've got some tricky wingers. They've got Zaha, who plays off the front usually, but then they've got Townsend, who wants to come inside off the right. We know that we've used Maitland-Niles to counter people who come inside off the right, like Mahrez. Maybe there's going to be a role for him. I'm not sure. It's just, if he doesn't play against Palace, I think it's a strange one, isn't it?
Well, no, not really. I think if he doesn't play against Palace, it's because we've got Kieran Tierney on the left-hand side and we're probably going to use Hector Bellerin on the right-hand side.
Well, what I mean is not playing against Newcastle or Palace.
Well, yeah, okay. I think not playing against Newcastle was strange. And I, you know, I'm not sure which role I would have played him in. I mean, he could play where Cedric played.
Yeah.
Or he could have played instead of Kieran Tierney, which would have probably been my preference ahead of the game because, you know, I do think we have to be super careful with Tierney. So, yeah, it is. It's a strange situation. It's a strange situation. I don't quite understand it myself.
I don't think Ainsley Maitland-Niles is long for Arsenal. I really don't.
I don't either. And I can kind of understand why we turned down the money that Wolves were offering, because I don't think it was great. I think it was...
15 million quid or so. 15
million.
Yeah.
It's not for great a guy for a guy's England international.
Into the England squad. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but now...
But the way we've used him hasn't done much to kind of improve his value. His value was probably at its high point then. I mean, they went and paid something absurd for Nelson Semedo, didn't they? Like 38 million or something.
Yeah.
So I do wonder if we might have been able, had we been willing to squeeze more. I mean, the indication was that Wolves had a limit they wanted to pay for Maitland-Niles, but given what they then did for Semedo.
Yeah.
I get slight Pepe vibes off Maitland-Niles regarding his relationship with Arteta. I just feel like something isn't quite right there.
Yeah.
I don't think he fancies him fundamentally. But he will occasionally use him like a sort of Swiss Army knife, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right. I wouldn't be surprised if come the summer he was gone. In the meantime, though, he's not a player we can let go in January.
No,
I don't think he is. Because of the cover that he can provide at left back and at right back.
Wow, and midfield, wings everywhere.
And there was another question on the Discord from, ironically, from Ainsley Maitland-Niles' cheeky grin. He says, do we need to sign another left back to replace Kolasinac, or is a mix of Suarez, Maitland-Niles and Saka enough cover? I don't think Saka can play at left back or should not play at left back. I'm sorry. At a push, if we've nobody else, sure, but like that's not where we should be playing him. He said, seeing Tierney play 120 minutes against Newcastle has got me worried we're going to overplay him.
Yeah, I had a look to see, like, you know, what have we got in the academy in that position? Is there anyone? Because, you know, that's Edu's job, not just to buy players, but have a view on what's the succession plan. And there is the kid, Joel Lopez, who everyone gets excited about. He's still only 18. I think he's had some injury problems. You think we need somebody, don't you?
I think we might, yeah. I think we might. I do wonder if there's a loan out there that we could do, but again, it depends on the profile of the player, whether they're homegrown or non-homegrown. It becomes a bit more difficult. I don't think we can keep playing Kieran Tierney in every game between now and the end of the season without it costing us.
No. And now we've gone to a back four.
Mm.
It's not quite the same, is it, dropping Maitland-Niles in as a wing back, as a full back?
But he has played there, in fairness. Yeah. He has played.
He'd be my choice. Even though he's a very different player to Kieran Tierney, I think he is the closest thing. Mm. But yeah, of course, if you're offering me a specialist, and we know Arteta loves specialists, you know, that's why we've got Cedric.
Specificity. Supposedly. That's what he keeps saying. He keeps using that one, specificity.
Speaking of January, Queen Guna says, so apparently we're looking to sign a number two keeper and send Renarsson out on loan. Having sacked most of our scouts, how worried are you about our future purchases? We seem to be just throwing money at average players rather and then trying to correct the problem months later.
Well, I tell you what, I'm happy to hear that we are looking for, I think Mikel Arteta said today, a solution to the goalkeeping situation. What did he say? Yeah. We're assessing the situation with the three positions in the goalkeeping area, and we will find a different solution probably in this window. He talked about the last window and said we didn't have much time to do what we really wanted to do. And obviously, Runarsson was quick, easy, available, and a very short-term solution to the issue. Where I would have some doubts and worries is that Runarsson very obviously was a recommendation of our goalkeeping coach.
100%.
Who worked with him before. And we are linked very heavily with David Raya.
Yeah, yeah.
Who worked with our goalkeeping coach before. Sure. And on the basis of the Runarsson recommendation, I don't think we should take into account what the goalkeeping coach says at all. Because this, you know, I feel sorry for him, but he's not up for it at this level, at this kind of club. He's just not. And I'm sorry. You know, I feel a little bit sorry for him. I felt sorry for him in that Man City game. And maybe that's not necessarily a true reflection of him as a player, but, you know, you've limited chances to impress or to convince people at this level. So that's what my I'm happy that we're acknowledging there's an issue, because I think an injury to Leno is a big problem. Would be a big, big problem. Like we saw it happen last season. You know, the door was open for Emi Martinez after Leno got injured against Brighton. An innocuous kind of incident. And all of a sudden we're down one of our most important players. And I remember at the time, look, we all loved what Emi did, but at the time we were talking about, like, oh shit, we're going to need to buy a goalkeeper. We're going to have to go into the market to get a goalkeeper to replace Leno, because nobody really expected Emi to do what Emi did. Mm-hmm. So it's positive that we are looking for a solution. I have concerns that the man, or that part of the reason we're looking for a solution, is that we were recommended a player who just isn't up for it. And that guy, I think, should be removed or distant from the process. You know, we have to look at the best player we can get, not the best player that comes with the recommendation of the goalkeeping coach.
Absolutely. And, you know, if Edu is the technical director and has an eye on the long-term vision, he will know that coaching staff come and go. So you don't sign a player who the goalie coach wants. You sign a player that suits the club and is right for the club over the next 5 years or whatever.
Do you think David Raya is that player?
Well, are you asking me personally what I think of him?
You personally, what you think of him? I mean,
I think he's all right.
I'll hold my hands up. I haven't seen a great deal of him. I think he's very good with his feet, as far as I know.
Yeah, he is good with his feet. He's sort of classic modern goalkeeper, you know, 6'1", very agile, good with his feet, comes outside his box, sweeps up a bit, gets involved in the build-up play. I think he's pretty good. Brentford will put up a real fight about letting him go in January, and they're very stubborn on this stuff. He's got a release clause in the summer. So if Arsenal really want him, then the solution is, I guess, a loan. But I think Arsenal can only loan two players, and they've already got one in Danny Ceballos. So, you know, they can't loan a left-back and a midfielder and a number 10.
Yeah, so. I saw somebody talk about this, because we mentioned that last week, and they said something like Fulham have six players on loan. I can't remember. Premier League loan rules. I think you're right, but
Okay. Under the rules of the Premier League handbook, there are restrictions on how many players. Forgive me. It's from English clubs that they
right.
Can loan
okay.
To.
Premier League.
The maximum number of loans registrable in any season is four.
Right.
But again, I think that relates to English clubs. So actually, if we loan from abroad, we're okay.
Assuming we can get a work permit or an extension or an exception or an exemption, given the Brexit thing, and seeing as supermarkets can't put fucking lettuce on the shelves, maybe it's more difficult to bring in a goalkeeper than we thought.
I spoke to an agent the other day who said that they were going through every player in the top three divisions of Argentinian football, putting them through an algorithm to figure out whether or not they qualify for Brexit Britain, basically. Jesus. And what's really interesting is it's a really high percentage. I think in the top division, they said more than half of the Argentinian players would be eligible to come here.
That's mental, because
they've
it?
Massively opened up the work permit. So basically, it's no longer done purely on international caps. It also takes into account domestic appearances.
Yeah,
so
first if you team played, appearances, yeah.
Yeah, and not even the top division. You could be playing in the second division in Argentina, and those appearances still count towards your work permit.
Wowzer.
So if, you know, if Edu, it's interesting, when we laid off all the scouts, we did keep our South American scouts. And I wonder, you know, must have had a view on that, maybe.
Mm, okay.
Right. Did I have another question? Probably.
I've got one here if you
want. Oh, go on. Yeah, you go for it.
Because we talked about them a bit earlier. Emil Smith Bro, who's at AFC Kevin 2003, says, if we could sign Buendia from Norwich, but it meant that Nelson / Willock would have to go on a loan permanent basis, would you do it in all situations, or it could be one on loan, one permanently, or both permanently?
Yeah, I'd definitely do that. I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Okay, can I ask you a question about Buendia then?
Yeah.
Does he not play from the right quite frequently?
Yeah, I mean, that is the concern. That is the concern, actually. I maybe was a bit hasty there. But, you know, I he does. He does play off the right. And we've got quite a few players.
We've a bit of an issue there on the right.
Yeah, I do kind of think that it's not a player I hold out a huge amount of hope for Arsenal landing anyway because of Norwich's situation.
Mm.
Maybe, you know, he could play another. I think it's not like he plays on the right because he can't play in the middle. I think he plays on the right because that's what fits with their system. I think he'd be delighted to play in the middle.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what makes me say that. I don't think it's quite like a Willian situation where you're asking to do someone something they just haven't really done before. But I don't hold out much hope for that one in January at all.
Yeah.
And then in the summer, if Norwich come up, you know, I think it'll be difficult again.
Hmm.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see that one happening.
No. Quick one from Tom Pigden. Do you think comments about Arsenal wanting a world-class number 10 for Smith Rowe to learn off, as reported by The Athletic, show club management is deluded as to our actual standing? Surely if such a player was for sale, Arsenal would not attract them.
Or afford them.
Afford them, yeah.
Yeah.
We just took out quite a big loan from the old
Bank of England,
for the Treasury.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that we're are we really targeting a world class number 10? Maybe.
Well, I'm sure we'd like to target one.
But
having a target and hitting it are quite different things, though, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't think a world class number 10 is going to come to Arsenal right now. And I don't think we could afford it anyway. So I think our solution is to try and find a player who could potentially become a world-class number 10. And maybe we're seeing the start of that in Emil Smith Rowe. Look, we're nearly at 50 minutes in this half, so I want to just call it quits here. But I do want to ask this question. Yeah. On the Discord, Riku Hurula says, I've never had a question answered, so I'm going to try these three. And he asked a question about winning cups, not interested. He asked a question about signing cover for Kieran Tierney. We've already covered that. But he says this, and I'm very curious as to your answer. He says, why do commentators always talk about hitting the back of the net? When a goal scores, it hits the front of the net. The back is the other side, right?
That's mind-blowing.
I never thought about that before.
They hit the front. If you hit the advertising hoardings, and then it, you know, I guess they're considering the back of the net as an entity. So what they're doing is hitting the front of the back of the net. Do you see what I mean? The side net is an entity, and the back of the net is a thing.
All right, calm down, Christopher Nolan. Fucking hell. that could be his next film, Back of the Netception.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm confused already.
Yeah, I mean,
but great question. It is. He finally had his question asked. There you go. It is possible. Dream a dream, guys.
It is.
Believe.
The back. Yeah. It's the front of the back of the net. Or the back of the front. Is it the reverse of the front of the back of the net?
Andrew, I've got to go. I'm running out of time.
Sorry. Okay. This could go on all day, in fairness. We will leave it there. Thank you, as ever, for being here. Thanks for listening. We've got another one coming on Friday, another Arsecast Extra, because we're playing on Thursday night. So please join us for that. In the meantime, take it easy. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
There you go. Good.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.